Let me turn to Professor Alexis Jay. There are nearly 13 million children in England and Wales, and current estimates indicate that one in six girls and one in 20 boys experience child sexual abuse before the age of 16. In March 2020, the Office for National Statistics estimated that 3.1 million adults in England and Wales had experienced sexual abuse before the age of 16. The independent inquiry into child sexual abuse spent more than 7 years taking evidence from 725 witnesses during 325 days of public hearings, and also hearing from over 6,000 victims and survivors of child sexual abuse during the Truth Project. That was examining 4 million pieces of evidence and producing 52 reports. And 6 months ago, they published their final report, and that put forward 20 recommendations for the government. You might have heard this week the Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, saying they had accepted 19 of the proposals that were put forward. But this morning, I got to speak to Professor Alexis Jay, who chaired that inquiry for 7 years, and I asked her what her reaction was to the government's response to her inquiry's recommendations.
It was one of deep disappointment.
Why?
Because it sounded as if there were significant numbers of 19, as you just mentioned, that were accepted. But when we looked at, in greater depth at the full statement, and the words on the page did not reflect that level of acceptance of the specific recommendations we made.
How so?
Because in a number of instances, the recommendations were very specific and drawn from the 7 years of evidence taking that we did. And the responses were vague, unspecific, without a timeline, and frequently did not address the issues that were contained in the recommendations.
Well, let's talk about a specific instance then, for example. They did say, for example, a mandatory reporting duty is set to be put in place. And that would be something you would support, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. It was one of the three centrepiece recommendations of the final report. The final report, I should say, contained 20 recommendations. Mm-hmm. However, there were 87 previous recommendations we made in our individual investigation reports on specific settings or organisations and institutions. Now, this was one of the three most important that we saw, and we absolutely welcome the commitment that was made to mandatory reporting. However, as with another of our centrepiece recommendations, redress, it was apparently accepted, but to be followed with a full public consultation and call for evidence in the case of mandatory reporting, and similarly on redress. Now, I do wonder what on earth the government thought we were doing for 7 years when we carried out extensive research and evidence taking on both of those areas, which is fully written up in the final report. We have already done this work. There is no need for it to be repeated. This should proceed to implementation.
And do you have any way of pushing back on that 12-week call for evidence, for example, apart from speaking out about it? Is there any way you can sway the government to go with what you have already?
The inquiry no longer exists, of course. Because it ended on the 31st of March. So we have no powers and no scope necessarily other than drawing it to public attention, which is why I'm on your programme now and very pleased to be doing so. And right now on your programme, I call on the government to think again and to reconsider what they've said and to enact all of our recommendations in full, without delay.
What have survivors and victims told you so far? Because there's a couple of things here. One, that it took 7 years, and I do want to get into what was happening over those 7 years. But that is a huge delay, I feel, for people to try and get some sort of response from the government to what happened, whether it's redress, for example. What are they telling you?
Well, I could summarise it using their words from several sources of victims and survivors who have been campaigning for years and years on it, first of all, for the inquiry. However, the words they are using now, since Monday, and these are direct quotes, this is smoke and mirrors, they are gaslighting us, it's a big con, and they're kicking the can down the road, for example.
Okay. Let me turn back to the 7 years that this investigation took place, or inquiry. What were you doing then?
It's a formal public inquiry, which requires to follow statute, of course. And that is entirely necessary. And it has to follow a procedure. So once that is completed, we carried out a very great deal of work, not just in the 19 areas that were constituted the public hearings, the investigation areas, but we also carried out a great deal more parallel work, one of the most important of which was the Truth Project. It was established to offer the opportunity for victims and survivors to share their experiences of childhood sexual abuse in a confidential and safe environment. Now, over 6,200 people took up this opportunity to talk to us over the life of the inquiry. They provided us with unique insights into the impacts of their appalling experiences, both at the time they occurred and throughout their lives, the impact it had on education, career, relationships, mental and physical health, to name some of these. And they also made suggestions for change, all of which were intended to reduce the chances of sexual abuse happening to children in the future. So that was a complex parallel activity that's hugely important and has provided us with, as I've said, a unique amount of information about the dreadful experiences that victims and survivors had. They had very high hopes of the inquiry because of the reports that we produced throughout the inquiry, totaling 52, 19 of which were on specific settings and institutions and reflected the public hearings. But we did an immense amount of consultation and research on areas that were important and had not previously been looked into. So you will appreciate everything that we finally concluded represents an extensive body of knowledge, new intelligence, and detail on all of the recommendations that we have made. In respect of redress and mandatory reporting, for example, yes, we looked at what other jurisdictions who had implemented them had done. We took advice from a vast number of people from across the world. So we see no need for the government to initiate consultations on redress schemes when we had already carried out all that work.
So with redress, it is to right past wrongs, if it's never possible, of course, to right those wrongs completely. But in some manner, perhaps it would be monetary compensation. Would that be fair?
Oh, of course, it should be. Redress should be about apology, acknowledgement of the responsibility for what happened, financial compensation, and support. Mm-hmm. Redress should cover all of that. And we had done extensive consultations again with victims and survivors. And despite what might be the perception, the financial compensation was not always the most important part mm-hmm. of it at all. But there are many schemes, and I'd say even in the UK, of course, the Scottish one, the Northern Ireland one are both underway. All of this is described and evaluated in our final report.
Because the headlines over the past day or so with Ms. Braverman talked about this redress, but your issue is that there's a consultation about it?
Yes, that is part of it. Indeed, in recommendation 19, the government accepted the need to introduce a redress scheme, but the detail of it, including eligibility, type, all of the stuff I've just been describing to you, the extent of the financial component will be considered following extensive engagement, including with victims and survivors, third sector organisations, local authorities, insurers and lawyers. That is what the government's response said And what I've just been describing to you encompasses all of that.
So you feel the work is already done. I'm hearing a theme here. A couple of more issues. The one recommendation the inquiry made that the government rejected was the creation of a child protection agency. Why did you feel that was important?
We were very clear that an agency with a single focus on child protection was necessary to ensure that children identified as suffering abuse or at risk of significant harm would be better protected in the future. We did not consider there was sufficient exclusive focus on child protection in the various organisations which carry out some aspect of it. So there's no single organisation covering child protection. The government response, while it proposed some changes, rejected this approach to focus on publishing as an alternative updated guidance and a potential change in the role of the Child Safeguarding Practice Review Panel, which is in place, but keeps the current system whereby child protection is spread between many different statutory and non-statutory bodies. And spreading child protection across so many different bodies tends to lead, we may say, to a silo mentality, not full and thorough multi-agency approaches where there's clear leadership on child protection itself. Child protection is a complex and difficult issue. It requires great skill in the assessment of individual children, and it needs to be of a high standard. And we think it requires the focus of a specific organisation.
Okay, that's your take on that particular one that was rejected. One more. You called for a cabinet minister for children, but doesn't Gillian Keegan, yes, the Secretary of State for Education, already have that responsibility?
She does indeed. However, she is the Secretary of State for Education, which encompasses many aspects of child protection, of course. But yet again, we need a specific focus on children and a cabinet level minister for children. We think this is hugely important.
They do say they've established a child protection ministerial group. Is that not enough?
This is new. No, I don't think it's enough at all, nor did the many people that we consulted about it. We think the issue of the welfare of children and every aspect of their experience ought to be represented at cabinet level with a specific focus. What could be more important for the future? There are currently 8 ministers of state who attend cabinet, in addition to the relevant Secretary of State, and these cover very many different areas of work. But the protection of children is very important and deserves the same focus as some of these areas. For example, veterans affairs, security and the treasury.
Okay.
Are children not as important as that?
So that is your question that you are putting to the government. You have worked in this area for decades, 30 years of social work. People may also know you that you led the independent inquiry into child sexual exploitation in Rotherham, for example. And then we've talked about the past 7 years, the work you've been doing. How do you stay resilient doing this type of work?
Well, I've often been asked that question. And the most important thing is, like many others, I have had a high level of professional training and I have been engaged in hearing about the dreadful things that happen to people, children and adults, throughout my professional life. And naturally enough, some issues are really more affecting than others. And of course, child sexual abuse is one of the absolutely worst things you can repeatedly hear about. The support of friends and family is very important. And talking through, much as we did in the inquiry, you know, there was a panel and myself that held the public hearings. And that was very important to listen to other perspectives and views. But like every professional who's involved in these areas, you're not immune. You should never be immune to being affected by what you hear. In a public inquiry, it's most important to remain impartial and objective.
That is Professor Alexis Jay, who chaired the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse. I do also want to read you a little of what Home Secretary Suella Braverman said, responding on behalf of the government. She said, thanks to the brave testimony of thousands of courageous victims, this inquiry uncovered a dark and disturbing truth, that adults often turn a blind eye to the serious sexual abuse of children under their care. No apology or compensation can turn the clock back on the harrowing abuse these victims suffered, but it is important survivors have that suffering recognised and acknowledged. That is what the compensation scheme will deliver. By bringing in mandatory reporting for adults working with children, we are shining a light on a crime which has for too long been hidden and silent. Today we are bringing this crime out of the shadows and saying no more. Perpetrators, you will have nowhere to hide. But as you heard, Professor Alexis Jay, who doesn't agree with the consultations that are attached to many of the recommendations. We'll continue following it.